Okay, hey everybody, this is John Haas here at Warrior Fitness Gym, www.warriorfitness.org, and I've got a very special guest on the line today. We're going to be doing an interview with Eric Gutman. And Eric, for those people who don't know you, could you kind of introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your background?
Absolutely. You know, Bud Jeffries asked me that the other day, and what I really wanted to put out there is, like, I'm a regular guy just like you and me, except that for some reason I'm fascinated with crafting and designing and experimenting with different training programs. And then I love to capture what I learn and share it with others. But also, you know, I'm an active duty naval officer. Currently, I'm a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy. So that means that a requirement is that I must be fit, otherwise they kick you out. And I take that very seriously. The other things that I've been exposed to is one of the key things that changed my whole perspective on the human body was I started learning Chen-style Tai Chi in college. And I learned that, you know, the softness usually overcomes the hardness, which is, it's counterintuitive in the West. You know, it's kind of like if you watch Aikido, Steven Seagal was probably the first guy that you saw, even though he does Aikijitsu, that he was able to absorb blows and then he would hit back. But this whole idea of softness absorbing the hardness. Then I went to study Chinese medicine, and the whole knowledge of acupuncture and herbs is something that I still do to this day to family and friends. And I really got excited about the tonic herbs, this whole idea of, yeah, there are herbs to fix you when you're sick, but there's also herbs to boost longevity. And that got me fascinated. Then I joined the Navy, and I was a naval flight officer, so that's like Goose in Top Gun or Owen Wilson in Behind Enemy Lines, you know, the guy who basically tells the pilot where to put the plane so we can accomplish the mission. When I was flying in Iraq, I was a little bit concerned because, you know, this is when they were beheading people on YouTube, and the only thing we got was like, well, here's a 9mm. And I always had this thing in the back of my mind. So what happens if my plane gets shot down? And as I'm climbing through the wreckage, some terrorist, some jihadist, puts an AK-47 to my head. And to be honest with you, I didn't really know what to do. And, you know, they talk about the last act of defiance. The last act of defiance means that you got caught, and instead of being captured alive, you pull out your weapon and you take as many as you can, but it's kind of like an assured death kind of thing. So I felt that, you know, I had very limited options. You know, it's like, okay, I could do last act of defiance. But I was responsible for 24 people. And I remember that they told me, you know, you don't get paid to fly into Iraq. You get paid to bring 24 people back home to their, you know, wives, husbands, you know, daughters, kids. So I was thinking, well, this last act of defiance is great if I choose to do it. And I got a wife and four kids, you know. But, you know, is it responsible when you have a crew? So, you know, thank God nothing ever happened. I did all my missions. And when I came back to the States, I was still a little bit bothered by it. And I started doing my research. And I really felt that in the shortest time possible, the thing that would get you to survive would be Commando Krav Maga. So as luck would have it, my chiropractor, when I went to the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, was about to start teaching CKM, Commando Krav Maga. And I fell in love with it because it's just so simple. It's really about survival. So you're not a martial artist. You're not going to go and be an MMA champion. You're simply going to learn how to survive a violent encounter, whether it's with a gun, a knife, on the ground. So I like that. It was very, very practical, and it's based on your natural reflexes. And it's also based on learning one technique and having it be the same technique, you know, with 50 applications. So the technique for the gun to the belly is basically the same to the gun to the chest, which is basically the same to the gun to the top of the head, which is basically the same to the gun to the side of the head, except you add one step, which is basically the same as the gun to the back of the head, which you add two steps. And that's one of the things that Moni Isaac, the founder, said. That he felt that it's funny that people brag and they say, I know 50 different techniques to deal with a gun to the head. And what he would tell me is like, you know, when it comes to a pressure situation, the more options you have, the slower your reaction time, because your brain is choosing which of the 50 techniques to use. So he said if you can have one technique with 50 applications, you actually shorten your reaction time. And Moni Isaac, you know, he was Special Forces in the IDF, that's the Israeli Defense Force. He was counterterrorism unit. He was a national judo champion, and he's trained UFC champions. He was the, you know, the coach for Carlos Newton. So he knows what he's talking about. And I also, when I started taking Commando Krav Maga, there was this warm-up. And as an officer, I felt like, you know, I had to give a good showing. And there were enlisted in the class, so I had to make sure that I gave a good show. But I remember my instructor said, oh, it's a body weight type warm-up. So I was like, you know, I was a little bit confident. You know, I was like, dude, you know, if I can bench press 360 and squat 405, I definitely can handle your body weight workout. Little did I know. So I kept a straight face throughout the whole 30 minutes of this whole workout thing. But I was dying on the inside. So after the class, I said, like, what the hell was that? You know, it was like burpees and tough jumps and stuff like I hadn't done since, you know, boot camp. And he said, oh, this is called Elite Combat Fitness. And I said, okay, I'm going to take this Elite Combat Fitness instructor course. And when I went there and I learned all these body weight drills and MMA drills and conditioning drills and the kettlebell, I basically stopped all my bodybuilding type workouts. That was in 2008, and I completely changed. It was like I thought I was fit, and it's not that I wasn't. I was to a certain extent, because every time I took my Navy military physical readiness test, I always did very well. I would always max out, you know, my push-ups and my sit-ups. Whatever they said is the score to get 100. I would say, what's the max score? 92 push-ups? Okay, that's what I'm going to do. What's the max score? 95 sit-ups? And that's what I would do. The run, I would always do okay. But after that day, I just stopped doing bodybuilding type workouts and did more of a conditioning type workout. Now, what's interesting is that you learn so much that you can't do it all at once, right? You have to pare away. And what happened was that my instructor was going to go up for his level 4. And you have to be very, very conditioned for those events, because part of the thing is not just your skill level. It's he's looking for a certain type of conditioning, Moni, when he's testing you. So since I took the course, my instructor said, I want you to develop the program to get me conditioned enough to pass the level 4. And one of the last tests is 10 minutes of nonstop attacks at full force. So that means that a guy puts a gun to your head, and you have like 2 to 3 seconds to get rid of the gun. And as soon as you take the gun away, there's a guy rushing you and taking you down to the ground and probably putting you in a chokehold. And you have 5 seconds to get out of that. And as soon as you break away from that, there's a guy putting a knife to your throat, and you have to take the knife away. And as soon as you take the knife away, and again, these are short bursts, but because they're done over 10 minutes, it's really exhausting. So Moni says, like, the first 5 minutes don't count. It's what happens after you're fatigued, after you start getting sloppy. And what he's watching for is not whether the technique was beautiful, was did you survive? For example, one of the key things with the gun disarm that he looks at is when you touch the gun, was the barrel pointing away from the body? Because you have to assume that the minute that you touch the gun goes off. So getting that barrel and your body in different places and time is extremely important. So if you just start touching and the barrel is pointing at you, like you grab the gun, but it's still like your body's in the line of fire, then you failed. And what happened is that I had to strip away to the bare essentials to get my friend conditioned. And, of course, I'm doing it with him, too, because I'm discovering this new way to be. You know, it's no longer the bodybuilding type workouts, which a friend of mine explained is like the butcher approach. It's like, you know, today I'm going to work legs, so give me a side of leg, and you only do legs. And then the next day you go, well, today I'm going to do chest, so I'm not doing anything but chest. So now every time I train my body, I train the whole body as one unit. So I'm never, like, worry about symmetry, because before I was worried about symmetry. Well, if I did my chest and my, like, I need to train my arms. No, if I start training legs again, then I miss my, you know, the whole bodybuilding type method, which is great. I love bodybuilding, don't get me wrong. But for, like, this type of conditioning type fitness where you have the best of strength and health and functional, that's where this type of workouts come along. And what happened is I basically settled on 2 days of body weight and 2 days of kettlebell. And I focused on the main basics, increasing in difficulty every single time. So we started with the slow-mo squats, and then we do the regular squats, and then we do something that they call ABC squats, which is kind of like in bodybuilding where you do what they call 21s, which is seven like half reps, seven half reps, and then seven full reps, and then all the way to jump squats. So over a 12-week period, you start with the very basic and you get to the very hard. And then with the kettlebell, the same thing. I was reading somewhere that the snatch is the most powerful expression of the human body or something like that. And I said, okay, then I'm going to build a kettlebell program that by the end, when I'm really conditioned, it has me doing mostly snatches. And that program that got my friend really conditioned, and here's what amazed me. When I was doing it, just to test it out, I purposely did not run a single day in 4 months because, A, I hate running, and, B, I was testing this. Let's see if it really conditions you. So I was doing body weights with the squats, push-ups, abdominal work, and burpees, and then 2 days of kettlebell. Now, I've always maxed my push-ups and sit-ups, so I was able to maintain that level of strength and endurance, but I actually ran 15 seconds faster without running a single day. Now, you know, to run 15 seconds faster when you're at, you know, a good time, it's pretty cool. And to do it without running a single day, it's even better. And this program that basically was all in my training journals, all the experimentation, is what became Extreme Military Fitness, which you can get at www.ericgutman.com. Well, I think you're selling it as well because you're an affiliate. So they can come to my site or they can go to your website and they like it. And here's one thing I like. My sister's husband had a back injury, and he used to be an avid runner. And when I got it out, I sent it to him. He came home, and I showed him how to use the kettlebell. He was kind of excited about it, but sometimes people need that hands-on approach. We did a couple of circuits. He took the book home. He started working with it, and he was actually able to start running again without any pain in his lower back. And I thought that was the coolest thing because I know he doesn't really like the kettlebells that much. He's not like going to become a kettlebell guy by any means. But he did just enough to get back to running, which is what he loves. And he couldn't because he had lower back pain, and that prevented him. So, I mean, a program that makes you run faster and kind of heals your lower back, I wasn't aware of that, but hey, that's even better.
Yeah, that's
awesome. Let me see what else. And the other thing that, I did the CKM, the Elite Combat Fitness. I started devouring everything I could get my hands on that had to do with kettlebells and functional, anything by Steve Maxwell, anything by Pavel, anything by Scott Sonnen. I was just implementing everything these guys were doing into the experiments I was doing with my friend. And one thing that I did notice that was the other big turning point in my life as far as what I do was I was out in the Middle East, and, you know, sometimes in the Middle East they just have these gyms which are basically tents or their containers or whatever. And sometimes, you know, they don't have enough instructors, so somebody says, I know this, I want to teach a class. Yeah, whatever, go have at it. So I was bored. It was my day off from flying missions, and a guy said, I'm going to teach a capoeira class. And it's like, I've never done it. That sounds fun. I want to do it. Now, you know that saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do? Well, I go there, and I should have paid attention that everybody took their shoes off. And the thing is, I kind of came in late. I found out about it, and it's like, hey, I just found out there's a capoeira class. Can I join in? And it said, sure, go ahead. And there wasn't like an instructor or a structure or anything like that. It was like they put on the music and kind of do start fighting the guy right then and there. And I go, great. So I started doing all these kicks and whatever. So it's not like I had a class. It's just like, get in there and do the best you can. Eventually you'll pick it up. Classic military style. And then what happened is I twisted my ankle. And I said, okay, that's fine. It's going to heal in 3 weeks. So for the rest of that deployment, every time I go up the stairs to my aircraft, it hurt, you know. And then I thought, okay, it's going to go away. But then 6 months later, it was still hurting. So I go to the chiropractor, who's, again, my Commando Krav Maga instructor, and I said, what's the deal with my ankle? You know, it should have healed in 3 weeks, but it hasn't. It's 6 months. And he started testing. It's like, dude, that's like a ligament. That's 18 months to heal. And for some reason, I got pissed off. I was like, no, it's not going to take 18 months to heal. I need my life back now. And I don't know. I'm going to find the answer. I don't know how, but I'm going to fix it myself. And I remembered one of the kettlebell DVDs I had. It was called The Boys Are Back in Town. It's a Mike Mahler. Again, anything by Mike Mahler is awesome. I'll just say that right now. But in this DVD, here's the funny thing. Of that whole series and everything in the DVD is awesome, I've only really, like, took to heart the Steve Maxwell mobility. I kind of saw everything they did, but I didn't practice. I've done double kettlebell work now, but when I first saw the DVD, I really started doing the mobility, and I saw the foot mobility as a way to heal my ligament in my foot. So I did it morning and night. Within 1 week, my pain was gone. Now, I thought I cured it, so I stopped doing it, and then it was a slight pain. So I noticed that if I did it, I would have a functional ankle, and I'm sure I healed it within 2 to 3 weeks. But within 1 week, my pain was completely gone. And then that's like when the lights went off. That's like the minor, that's when the epiphany happened, that joint mobility is the key to health, it's the key to longevity, and it's the key to recovery. So after that, I became a joint mobility, like, student again. Like, anything that had to do with mobility, I would consume it, I would experiment it, I would try it. And another thing that happened to me, which when it happened to me in, like, when I was in college, would completely set me out, was that I was in Cartagena, Colombia. That's where the Secret Service had their big, you know, shindig. And it's an old city. It's like a 500-year-old city built by the Spanish. You know, at that point in time, I wanted to work out, so I woke up early, and I wanted to do uphill sprints. So here I am in this 500-year-old, you know, walled city, and I'm going through one of the ramps. Now, this is like it was like made out of stone, so it had a lot of holes, which I should have known better, but I thought that I can handle anything. You know, I got to train on uneven terrain. So I'm running up this, you know, incline, my ankle twists all the way. But by this point, I've been doing joint mobility for years now. You know, so this is like, what, 2011? And so I started in so I had 3 years of solid joint mobility, and I twisted my ankle, and I ran back down, and a guy comes out, you know, a local, says, "Hey, I saw what happened to your ankle. Are you going to be able to get to your, like, hotel?" I said, "No, I got it." I just simply went to another location, and I finished my workout like nothing happened. And that's the second thing that I noticed, that if you do joint mobility every day, it protects you. So you can take more stuff that would injure you like 20 years ago because you were just stiff. Now you just are able to roll with it. And that's why I became so enamored with mobility that when I was talking with Bud Jeffries about the seminar and he saw what I was doing, he says, "No, you need to present this," because I go to anti-aging seminars. And, you know, a lot of people like in their 40s to 70s that are really health conscious attend these things. And I noticed that whenever somebody hears about that I know joint mobility, they ask, like, "Can you give us like an impromptu session?" And there's only five guys. But by the end of like 10 minutes, I've got 40 people doing joint mobility. And then they say, "Can we do some of your easier workouts?" And again, even if it's just slow-mo push-up and slow-mo squat, then from 40, it goes back down to 5. Because anybody from 7 to 77 can do joint mobility and get results. And I remember I would tell Bud, like, "Yeah, people always ask me for that." I just say, "Hey, you know, there's all these, I thought everybody knows it, just buy any DVD out there." And that's when Bud says, "No, because what you're doing is you've created a specific routine where you've combined the best of everybody and you've structured in a certain order, and that's what they want." And he's the one who kind of made me see the light. He's the one that says, like, "Oh, so you're saying people want what I'm doing as opposed to just joint mobility in general." And that created the joint mobility course that was presented at the Superhuman Workshop. I actually did it first in Michigan, and those are the testimonials that are on the website. And they're actually yoga practitioners that were actually able to improve their mobility. You know, yoga people are very healthy. They've got very limber muscles, but that doesn't exactly mean that they train their joints. It means they train their flexibility. And that's what I find fascinating, that, you know, you can do a session of joint mobility with even experienced people and they still get benefit and they still love it. And now they're incorporating joint mobility into their yoga classes and the people love it. And that, of course, makes me very, very happy, because in the end, to me, it's all about health and longevity. So everything I do is to see how long can I live. My goal is to get people to the point where how long you choose to stay in the planet is your volitional choice. Because think about this. I'm sure you study ninjutsu and you've had access to Japanese culture. I am sure that you know of cases of people that they simply wake up one day in perfect health, and they just tell the people in their group, their tribe, their clan, that they wish to depart, and they do a ceremony. And by the end of the ceremony, that person goes, and it was a completely normal thing. So when I heard or read of these things, I go, so that person didn't get sick. That person chose to leave. And yet, we, you know, like
right,
here
right,
in the West, you probably know someone or have a family member that was supposed to be dead 3 weeks ago physically, but because they're waiting for their brother or their sister or their son or their daughter, they stay alive on sheer willpower, and then when the daughter or the son comes, they say their last goodbye, and they die the next day. So these things convince me that there's a certain element of will. There's a volitional aspect to life that is more than just the physical. And I don't know if you know who Peter Ragnar is, but, you know, he's the guy who's really pushing, well, how long can you live, you know, and how long can you live to the best of your abilities? And he's the guy who really started me thinking, well, if I can choose how long to live, then I want to live as long as I can in perfect health. But it's like there's a mindset. I remember I work with, you know, I'm in the Navy. I work with naval officers from all over South America. And I was talking to this Chilean naval officer. And he would say, you know, I see you working out, but, you know, I used to run triathlons when I was in my 20s, but now I'm not 20 anymore and I can't do it. And then he goes, but then who works out when they're 60? And I go, what are you talking about? Jack LaLanne was working out when he was 96. Jack LaLanne worked out 2 days before he died. And he didn't die from some disease. He just died peacefully in his sleep. So you can work out your whole life. And he looked at me and he was starting to think about it like, yeah. So the first thing is to develop the stubbornness that you're going to live, to develop, to make a decision to do whatever it takes to be healthy and stay alive and live a long life. That's like the first thing. Once you do that, you're going to see that you're going to start changing your eating habits, your workouts, and stuff like that. And then that's why I say I'm just a guy who made a decision and who's constantly doing an experiment on himself, and that nothing gives me greater joy than to share my experiments. You know, most of the stuff I give away for free on my website. Every experiment you can track. Now, if I get enough data to actually write a book or a course, then we sell the book or course. But most of the times, if you just go to my blog, you'll see exactly what I'm experimenting. Like you and I remember when I first did the whole thing about flipping a tire 100 times, before, I said, I got an idea. And that was the heavy metal meditation part one. So at the time, it was an idea. I never done it. I only done tire flipping once with Bud Jeffries. Like at one seminar, I did it like five times. That's the only time I ever did it. That was like a year ago. So then I remember, hey, yeah, I remember you saying something about conditioning. Now, today was the third time I flipped the tire 100 consecutive times. Now, it did take me 6 weeks, but what's interesting is that it's an experiment. When I start the experiment, I don't even know if I'm going to be successful. I just say, here's what I'm doing, and then I just write it down, and here's my logic. And then now that I was able to come up with a winning formula, it's all there, you know, so people can say, okay, he did a max prep day, then he did a recovery day, and then he did an anaerobic day doing 20 sets of five as hard as he could. So it's a pattern. And then that's what I say, like, yeah, if flipping a 300-pound tire 100 times is a little bit out of your league, then you can start with extreme military fitness, which is the best way to learn, and it's completely healthy. Because that's the thing I got worried about. There's a lot of workouts out there that, you know, the dark side of them that you don't get to see is how many injuries they make. And to me, it's like once a bunch of us, you know, naval officers, all in aviation, went to this go-kart track to have fun. And we had a couple of engineers there, you know, we're all trying to see, well, how can we win, right? And we start looking at the go-karts, and they're all the same. Okay, so all the go-karts basically have the same horsepower. So then this guy, the really smart engineer type, was looking at the track, and then he says, the key is not to bleed off energy. And basically, to win, you needed to be very judicious with how you took the curve so that you wouldn't lose energy. And that's the way I see injuries. When you train wrong or you go like crazy and you have an injury, that not only sets you back for that moment, but that also sets you back for more of your potential growth. So the most important thing is to never bleed off energy, right? To conserve your energy and to always be in a state of optimum health. And again, we're always going to get dinged because we're making experiments. Like the next thing I was experimenting with, and this is something, because I know you have a good background in taijutsu, something you could explore, is I was doing a tire flip mixed with some kind of acrobatic movement. So I would flip the tire and I would do like the rollout squat. I would first push it and then I would go so a contraction and then I would try to completely relax my body so I would roll back and then snap back up. The other thing I'd be doing is like I'd flip the tire, I'd do a tuck jump to the middle of the tire and then I do a judo roll outside the tire. So I'm working on a contraction and then a movement drill, you know, which is kind of acrobatic to teach me to relax. And that is something that I was thinking about you, because if we make some, and it could be with a tire, which is just big and using your whole body, it could be something else where you're doing an explosive thing that forces your whole body to contract, and then a whole body, you know, movement drill like taijutsu, which allows you to use your body in one unit and work on your relaxation and movement as one unit as well. That to me, that's what I'm kind of like playing with right now, because I've already done 100 tire flips. Now I'm on to my next experiment.
Absolutely. That's really cool, because, you know, we're doing some tire flips as part of one of our workouts. And so one of my clients says, you know, how can I make this a little bit more challenging? So I looked at it and I said, I said, let's do this. And exactly what you just said, I said, let's flip the tire, then do a tuck jump into the middle, and then do another jump to the outside of the tire, then turn around, flip it again, and do the same thing back and forth. So he absolutely loved that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the idea of doing that and then doing a roll afterwards, oh, that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, there's a trainer that he's really good. I may work on a book with him over at the base. And he saw me, you know, like, because what happened was, like, I didn't know anything. So, and that's good, because when you start with a clean slate, I remember Bud Jeffries told Laurel Blackburn, if you can get to 50 straight tire flips, you're going to be in good conditioning shape. So I said, okay, if I can do 50, I'm good. So the first day, I go to the base, and I said, I'm going to flip the tire, you know, whatever. I did 50, but, you know, in sets of five. And my forearms were burning out. Like, I had to stop. And my forearms hurt that night, and my forearms hurt the next morning, because that's what Bud Jeffers told me, like, you're training in the open hand position. So then I go, and I'm talking to someone, and they ask me, like, what are you doing? One of the trainers was asking, like, what are you doing? I said, oh, you know, I want to get to 50 consecutive tire flips. And then they said, oh, yeah, we had some general here. He used to do 100. I said, some general did 100 tire flips in a row? Yeah, I think so. I said, well, some general does it, then I got to do it. So, you know, I originally was going to do 50, but if some general did 100, then I was going to do 100 too. You know, just
now,
in principle.
Did you ask how many pounds was the tire that the general was flipping?
You know, I don't know, but it had to. Well, here's the thing. They may have two 250-pound tires, one 300-pound tire, and the 600-pound tire. And
oh, okay.
So, and yeah, it's funny because when I went to do the first time I saw the 600, I didn't know it was 600 pounds. I started to look like, yeah, this doesn't feel right. So I looked for another one and I grabbed the 300-pound tire. But yeah, he told me like that nobody ever uses the 600-pound tire. He says most people only do it once, and that the guy who's seen it do it the most was 5 consecutive reps in that. Nobody's ever done more than that with a 600-pound tire. So, again, I may then just try to do the 600-pound tire a couple of times, just like reps of one, you know, 10 reps of one. Like, I'll do a one rep, rest a minute, one rep, and then I'll see how that goes. But right now I've got a PRT in 2 weeks, and I haven't run a single day. I haven't done anything except tire flipping. And then on the last 2 days, then the last 2 weeks, I have added, like, a burpee at the end of the tire flip, you know, what I'm talking about tying a movement. So I did flipping the tire in a burpee, flipping the tire on a kick. I think I sent some of that. I think I sent you some of the articles where I started seeing all the possibilities of tire flipping, because I thought it would be really cool if you could get like a trainer with some tie pads, and as you're kicking, punching, and dodging blows, then to simulate a takedown, you flip the tire. And the guys, you know, and that way, you know, he's tipping you on your toes, and then when he steps back, you gotta like dive forward, like if you're gonna take the guy's legs and flip the tire. And that would really smoke you. But for that, you need two people, and I usually train alone. That's usually my experiment, you know. And but I started thinking, what are some things you can do by yourself? But again, for the most part, I've only done tire flipping for 6 weeks. I haven't run in like 3 months. So I want to see what happens when I run on the 25th. We'll see if my experiment pays off. I'm sure it will.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, you did send me those articles, and they will be coming up on the Warrior Fitness blog pretty soon. So we
you know what's funny is that
Eric, I've got so much good stuff from you. I have to stagger it.
I know. What's funny is that sometimes people get it from you before they get it from me, because you know I don't manage anything. I mean, I'm an active duty naval officer, and I have naval officer responsibilities. So I remember when I was talking to Bud and Logan, Bud says, "Look, your goal is to do 2 quality articles a week." And he says, "It has to be quality." And I said, "Roger, I'm going to do 2 articles that have quality content, and that's how I do it." And then Bud and Logan, they manage everything else. So I don't have any books. I don't have anything, you know. My goal is to write good articles that communicate something of value. So it's funny that they have a backlog too. So it's funny, so sometimes I'll send it to you and Logan in the same day. And then it'll come first on your site before it shows up in Logan. So I think that the heavy metal meditation part 3 appeared in your site over the weekend, and today is when it finally got posted on my site. So those who follow you will get the stuff before it's even on my website.
Ah, cool. Very cool. Yeah, because I know I've had several of my clients have read your heavy metal meditation, and it's really, you know, kind of jazzed up their workouts.
Nice.
They're at the point where they're saying, "Oh my God, you know, like 100 reps, I don't know if I could do that." And I said, "Hey, you know, Eric did it, and he gave you the plan right here. You know,
yep.
You can," I said, "if you want to work on this, we could do this." And then, you know, we're also going to start doing some of the extreme military fitness stuff here as well, kind of get
nice.
Them ready for that. So, you know, plus I'm jealous. I want to do 100 tire flips too.
And here's the thing, like I wrote in that last one, because here's the thing, like my goal was to do it as a meditation. That's how I wanted to do it. That's how I still want to do it. Because what I was doing was, I was walking up, I'm going slow. I mean, I'm not trying to go fast on purpose. But my goal was to, as I squat down, I inhale. As I push up, I exhale. And then I take one step, and then I squat down and in. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to move at the rhythm that I could still tie it to the breath. As I say in the article, you know, I talked to Buzz, "Hey, I finally did it." And he goes, "What was your time?" "It was 9 minutes and 55 seconds. You know, and then he kind of goes, "Oh, you know, is that your best time?" And I go, like, "No, I mean, I'm not trying to go fast. I'm trying to see what I can do." But then I started thinking, like, well, what would be a better time? And then the next workout, I did it in 7 minutes and 20 seconds. So now what I did not like about it was that because I was focused on speed, I didn't do like the full squat down. I did kind of like a half, because you know now I'm trying to speed it up, and
right,
then of course tying the breath to the movement each single time. You know that at this point you're huffing and puffing. So I've already proved to myself that if I want to do like a couple of workouts under 8, but I want to start seeing if I can extend the meditation to 200. You know, and then again I may have to switch my whole workouts around, but I'm saying like, I want to see, maybe I'll do like 120 the next time, slow. Because I like the idea of not getting focused on like, I got to finish 100 real fast. I like the idea of, I'm going to do a perfect rep and focus more on the breathing and let the body tell me when to stop. When I can no longer have good form, then I stop. And again, it took me 6 weeks from 50 to get to 100. It took me 6 weeks. And you'll feel it. You know, let's say you wanted to do 70. And, you know, if by 65 your forearms are fried, then you stop at 65, you know. And it's
right.
Funny because I like doing that full squat that looks like the power lifter squat, because, you know, since you're getting close to the tire, you have to kind of like open the hip joint. You can't just do the leaning. You can't just do like the bodybuilding squat where only the butt goes back. You have to do that powerlifting, like open the hip type squat to get in and get your hands good under the tire. So, but here's the beauty of it. Same exercise, two different ways to approach it. You can approach it as a sprint, and it'll kick your ass. I did it today, and today I did like in 7:57. So, you know, I try to go fast, and that created a little bit of extra tension, and then a couple of times I just rested. You know, I kind of took that knee and took 5 breaths and then kept going at it. Here's an interesting thing, though. When I was starting to do it, I did your Evolve breathing. You know, when you do that whole, like, where you fill your lungs from the bottom, middle, and top, and you raise your hands, and then you drive the whole breath out? If I do that 3 times, it really helps with my recovery. But what was interesting about it is that I needed to do it at first, and then after, like, the 4th week, I was able to just start adding more and more reps without having to recover. Like, just stopping and writing it down, I already felt great, which was very interesting because I wonder how much of that recovery breathing I did in the first 4 weeks was critical to make me to be able to do it in a row. You understand what I'm saying? Because you have sometimes you have so many factors in the equation that you want to go, well, how pivotal was that? Or was it just that my body adapted to the conditioning?
It could be a combination of both where, you know, your nervous system kind of started to adapt to it and getting the breath to lower the heart rate. And then as you got better at it, it started to almost adapt in anticipation of you doing the breathing.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying?
But, yeah, I mean, the thing to me with the tire flipping, I think it's cool to one day just kind of like treat it like a sprint and see how short you can make it. Again, the best time I did was 7:20, and I'm sure some dude out there can probably break 7 and get like 6:30 or something. But I want to go back to my original idea, and I want to see if I can do 120 because I want it to not feel like I want to transcend the physical and turn it into a breathing exercise. Because what's funny about it is that, like, the first time I did 100 reps, my forearms felt great because I did it like this meditation thing. But the next day, I was like, you know when you're bone tired? Like, you're tired in a real deep way. And I remember I was going to do my recovery work. It's like, I just need to rest. But the second time I did the 100 reps, I felt great. So your body does adapt it. Now, today I did the 100 reps again, and I feel awesome. You know, I feel like tomorrow I'm going to wake up just normal. The other thing I really like is doing the joint mobility every morning really helps to reset your body and recover. Because a lot of days I wake up like, wow, I think I overdid it yesterday. And then I'll do my full mobility routine in the morning, and it's night and day because I'll go like, I don't know if I'm going to work out today. You know, maybe I need to take another day of rest. And then I do my full mobility routine in the morning. And then it's like, no, I'm fresh. I can do it. I got it. And that's what I think is one of those keys to longevity that, you know, it's not sexy. You know, you look at gym mobility and I bet that 50% of the exercises you probably did in gym class, like hip circles and arm circles. Now there's some very specific things. Like very few people have worked on their thoracic cage. And there's also, like, it's funny, like, I used to teach at a friend's CKM school, and, you know, he does jiu-jitsu, and his kids, you know, he has, like, 8 or 10 year olds. I think they're teenagers now. But I remember I would go there, and I would, like, you know, warm up my hip, and then they'd, like, giggle, like, he moves his hips. And I go, like, yeah, you want to be able to move your hips. You have to own your body. This is normal human movement, and what amazes me, which causes a lot of pain in the West, is that people do not have full use of their bodies. People's joints are frozen, they're stiff, and what happens is, you know, it's like those little old ladies, and here's what breaks my heart. Like, I'll be, like, and this happened, my wife is from Peru, and I went to Peru, and I was hanging out with her aunt and her grandmother. And a couple of our aunts are really into the whole health thing. And they were asking me questions about Qigong and nutrition and joint mobility. And I said, no, because joint mobility and this is absolutely true. You know, if you move your joints every day, then every day you will be able to move your joints. That's some Eastern Bloc wisdom. My father's Hungarian, and he said that his wrestling coach, his Greco-Roman wrestling coach in Hungary, said, if you do something every day, then every day you'll be able to do it. And that's how I feel about mobility. If I achieve full mobility every morning, then every morning for the rest of my life, I will have full mobility. That means when I'm 100 or 120, I'll be touching my hands to the floor. It is my goal to touch my wrist to the floor every morning from a standing position. So when I was there explaining these things to my wife's aunts, her grandmother is there, but her grandmother's back is already, you know, because of so much immobile, the vertebrae already fused, and she's got that little humpback. And she goes, if I do mobility, will my humpback go away? Like, will my, you know, my little curve go away? And I said, you know, to be honest with you, once they're fused, it's really hard to get them back. But while you have it, you know, supple, if you move it every day, you can prevent it from happening. And it broke my heart to have to tell her that. It says, you may feel some improvement, but I can't tell her, yeah, you're going to be just the same as your 50-year-old daughter if you do these things. Now, the 50-year-old daughter can keep her spine perfect for the rest of her life if she does joint mobility and will never have to have that humpback look or that curve in her spine that gets fused and impedes with everything. Because one of the things that Steve Maxwell says that I truly believe, and it comes from Joseph Pilates, is that, you know, your spine is what determines everything. Because when your spine locks up, then your movement is compromised, and that's the beginning of heart attack. So if your spine is able to freely move, that is the greatest thing you can do to maintain your health and to keep you mobile. I guess you can tell I'm a big fan of joint mobility.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, as you know, so am I, you know?
Yes, that's what I like.
Absolutely. You know, I do joint mobility every morning, and I've been doing it every morning for probably about 10 years now. So I do it, you know, with every class that I teach, whether it's, you know, martial arts or fitness, whatever we do here, I'm always teaching joint mobility as a warm-up and a cool-down. So,
and you know what's funny is it takes time. It took me 3 months to regain full use of my body. And here's what's interesting to me. Here I am, you know, strong dude, whatever, you know. I thought I was fit. And I was, you know, by average standards, I was. But if you don't have full use of your body, if you do not have full use and control of your joints, can you really say you're healthy? And that is something that, you know, when you're in your 30s, you go, yeah, whatever. But the repercussions of not being mobile is you start feeling them at your 50s and your 60s. That's why these people with these hip pains and these knee pains, hey, you know, nothing feels better than fully mobilizing my knees in the morning, and I feel how all these little, you know, little perhaps aches that start to develop, you neutralize them right then and there. You know, when I mobilize my ankles, and it's also kind of addictive because you kind of like reset your body. You know, I have to remind myself that I'm not doing joint mobility for all the snap, crackle, pops, that it's kind of like a free chiropractic treatment. I'm doing it to relax the joint and gain mobility. But, you know, when you get relaxed and you mobilize your body, everything aligns. The neck cracks into place. The spine cracks into place. And by crack, I mean that it aligns naturally. Both the bone structure and the ligaments surrounding fall into place. And you feel better. You feel like there's an energy that's liberated that before you were perhaps tight or stuck, and now you've released it. And by constantly releasing these blocks on a regular basis, it improves everything you do. It improves every physical skill you want to learn. It improves any energy work you want to do. It improves any meditation you want to do, because when you fully mobilize your spine and your hip and your whole body, when you sit down to meditate, the energy flows a lot more freer through your whole channels. You know, it'll go up the spine a lot easier because you've already opened it manually, physically. So all those ligaments are open. All that structure is open. So, and that's one of the things that amazes me, how something so simple is so powerful. And it's really the key, because your structure starts from the bone and it grows out from there. And the power stations of the body are the joints. More than the muscles, it's the joints. Because the joints are able to multiply the force that you create. And this is like one of the things that I learned in Tai Chi. The people who are still in Tai Chi, they don't hit you with a muscle contraction. They send their energy down to the ground, and then they bounce it back. But what they do is they multiply it. So they bounce it back, and the ankle multiplies it. The knee multiplies it. The hip multiplies it. The spine multiplies it. The shoulder multiplies it. The elbow multiplies it. And then the wrist multiplies it. So that's why they have to be so relaxed to throw all their energy down, bounce it back, and when that hits you, it's like nothing you've ever felt. The first time I took the Tai Chi class, I'm looking around, and I was like, you know, like 20 pounds heavier from bodybuilding, and the guy's talking about hitting people with the internal energy. And I'm putting this look like, yeah, right, you know? And then he says, let me show you. And he takes one of his students, and he kind of does like the one-inch punch thing, like he just puts his hand real close, and he goes like, and he kind of breathes into him, and the guy kind of like goes back. And I just said very respectfully, like, well, he's your student, you know. He's doing it out of respect. Says, would you like to try? And I go, yeah, I want to try it. So then he goes, and he says, all right, I want you to tense your chest. And he goes, I'm going to hit you with muscle and bone. And he kind of does a double axe handle, and he hits me across the chest, and I had a big chest at that time. I tensed it, and it basically, you felt this thud. And he says, did you feel that? And I go, yeah. That was bone and bone, muscle and muscle. And I said, yeah. And I felt pretty good because, you know, he hit me hard, and I took it like a man, you know. And then he goes, okay, now I'm going to hit you with the internal energy. So do whatever you need to do to get ready. And he goes, are you ready? Yeah. So again, I'm thinking, I got this, right? And he basically puts his middle finger in my rib cage, right? And only with the distance of his index of his middle finger, he just kind of like shifts his whole body and again with the whole joints. So it just turns. And what I felt was it's like somebody squeezed my lungs from the inside out and squeezed all the air out, and it just felt horrible. And I go, oh my God, what the hell was that? And then he's smiling. He goes, that was the internal energy. And at that moment on, I said, oh, my God, I've never felt anything like this. He says, I only use 15% of my power because if I use full force, then I could rupture a lung. And then I could see like he was being completely honest. You know, if somebody were to take that full internal energy when they learn to develop and use every joint as a powerhouse and unload it in a human being, you can rupture organs. And after that day, I said, oh, my God, you know, like, this is true. I thought it was just like an exaggeration or a science fiction or it's martial fiction, but the internal energy is true. And then the other things I've seen is the great stories of healing that happen from internal energy work, both the people that practice it on themselves. There's, when I was studying acupuncture, we were reading about this woman who was 77, and she was a Qigong master. And I was reading like her story, and what happened, she was an actress. And when she was 55, she got diagnosed with cancer. So she goes, and she preferred the Western medical approach, because in China, you can choose between Western medicine or Eastern medicine. And sometimes people, the modern Chinese, like, no, I want the Western medicine, which is more scientific. Well, it didn't work for her. She still had the cancer. Then she goes, well, I'll try acupuncture and herbs. That still didn't work for her. So here she is, 55. She has to get out of acting because she's, you know, I guess she's reached 55. And because she has this health concern, she gave up hope with Western medicine and Eastern medicine. She goes to the park, and this is old lady doing Qigong. She learns Qigong from her and starts practicing 8 hours a day. And she cures herself of cancer. And now, 20 years later, or 22 years later, she's a Qigong master teaching others. And when I heard that, I remember I was in the class learning acupuncture and mental medicine. It's like, oh, my God, this is it. It's the Qigong. And then everybody was, like, really jaded, like, hey, Eric, who's going to practice Qigong for 8 hours? You're lucky they can do 15 minutes. And they kind of rained on my parade, and I go, well, yeah, in the West, who's going to practice 8 hours a day of Qigong? You know, in China, maybe, you know, it's communist state, so they don't have to work or be productive to earn a living, you know. But what I mean by that is that it's a communist state. You know, if she's worked 55 years, they'll find a way for her to take care of her illness, you know. And but I thought, but hey, there's there's power in that qigong. If somebody can heal themselves of cancer, it shows me that there's great power and it's an area to be explored. And I do meditation or qigong every morning. I'd like to do a lot more, but then, I'm in the Navy and I got to get to work on time. So I got this little morning routine where I kind of set myself for the day. I do my joint mobility and then my qigong or my meditation, depending on the experiment I'm playing on. But again, there's power in that thing. That's like the second key to longevity. To me, the first one is joint mobility followed by qigong. And it's something that anybody at any age can do.
Definitely. So, Eric, I had a whole list of questions to ask you. And quite honestly, you've like answered everything and then more. We're coming up on an hour for this interview. So I'm thinking that, we might have to do like part two.
We may have to do part two, three, and four.
Because there's so much here, and you've had such awesome experience, and you're very engaging, and I just love listening to you talk about this stuff. It's so cool.
Because I got to talk to you about my nutritional experiments. I'm playing with a Zappa right now. I mean, it's when my wife tells me, like, if people in the Navy knew what you're up to, I think they revoke your clearance. And it's nothing bad, but, my wife will see me holding two electrodes that's running a current through my body to sap certain viruses. This whole thing about this liver cleansing where you run this electrical current, microcurrents, which is something called a zapper. And it's you run it through your body to kill certain viruses and bacteria, and then you do the liver cleanse. And I did it once, and it's true. It clears out your bile ducts. And one of the interesting things you do is, like, the way you can tell is because, and of course it's, through the feces, but the way you can tell the feces from the bile ducts is that they're little green stones that float. That's how you can tell where you cleared your liver out. So these are the kind of things that my wife walks into the room, and she looks at me like, what are you doing? She's like, Peter Wagner sells these magnets. So sometimes, and they're really powerful magnets, so sometimes I'll put like five, like one in my third eye, one in each of my temples, one in the back of my head, one in the top of my head, and then I'll start meditating with this crown made of magnets just to see what it's like. And then my wife walks in the room and is like, I don't even want to know.
That's great.
But it's funny because now it's like somebody asked her, like, does your wife, she must be on board, people that know me personally, like, because she's doing some crazy thing. And I said, she's not necessarily on board. We play a joke and we call it the crazy things. But I've noticed that whatever I did 5 years ago is her normal today. So what I'm doing right now, it's a little bit crazy for her, but in 5 years it will be her new normal.
Good stuff, man. So yeah, I'm thinking we should probably wrap up the call, but definitely, schedule part two, part three, part four, as much as we can get in here, because I would definitely love to, keep going on this, and I'm sure the listeners would really appreciate hearing the rest of this stuff as well. So, but what I'm going to do is I'll put this on my blog, and I'll send you the link. And I'll also put links to your website and all of your products down below, so that we've got the Extreme Military Fitness and the Moving Freely for Life and, all those links down there. So
Excellent.
Good stuff. Well, I just want to, say thank you again for, you taking the time. I know you've got a busy schedule, but I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and this interview, and we will do this again.
Well, it was my absolute pleasure.
All right, so do me a favor, hang on the line for 1 second.
Okay.
All right, and I'm going to sign off here, and then I'll talk to you in a minute.